This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today, the Senate's scheduled to begin voting on amendments to a new farm bill, officially known as the Food and Security Energy Security Act of 2007. The bill includes billions of dollars in subsidies for farmers and will set the country's agricultural policy for the next 5 years and help determine what you find in the supermarket and how much you pay for it. An unusually wide range of groups, including doctors and environmentalists, as well as agribusiness and small farmers, all have interests at stake. The bill also allocates money for nutrition programs, including food stamps, rural development, land conservation, and alternative energy programs. The Senate hopes to reach a consensus by the end of the week. And as debate continues, we want to focus not on the details of the bill, as important as they are, but on a broader question. Why does the federal government subsidize farming in the first place? We want to hear from those of you who farm, of course, but also from the rest of you who eat. Why do we subsidize farmers? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the program, the president of the New York Philharmonic joins us to take your questions about the orchestra's just-announced visit to North Korea and your letters. But first, farmers and subsidies, and we begin with George Naylor, an Iowa farmer who grows corn and soybeans, also president of the National Family Farm Coalition. He's with us from the studios of our member station in Ames, Iowa, WOI, and it's nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Well, thank you, Neil. It's a pleasure to be here.
And does your farm receive subsidies?
Oh, yes. Yes, I raise corn and soybeans, and almost any farmer that raises any of the what are called program crops, corn, soybeans, wheat, or more generally, feed grains, oil seeds, food grains, and cotton receive subsidies. It's a natural part of what has been called the safety net. And it's important for people to understand why there's a safety net and what we should have instead of that safety net that depends on subsidies.
Mm-hmm. How much money do you get? Did you get last year, for example?
Well, I didn't get very much last year. I think I got about $6,000, but I think probably in a peak year, like in 2005, I received $23,000, which was probably more than half of my income.
And I was going to say, is that the difference between making it and not making it financially?
In many years, it is. Currently, farm prices are high. They seem high, and I will not receive most of the types of government payments like countercyclical payments. But the people need to understand that the cost of farming have basically doubled in the last 5 years. Fuel prices, fertilizer prices have skyrocketed, and we have to borrow a heck of a lot more money every spring just to put in a crop. So we're really putting a lot of money up front, and we never know for sure whether we're going to get enough back to pay our bills.
A lot of businesses have to pay increased energy costs, too. Why should farmers be singled out to get such vast subsidies, do you think?
Well, Congress hasn't got the message that people want to buy good food and they want farmers to do a good job of farming. And instead, they've pitted us against each other, and so we're in a straitjacket by them leaving us to the mercy of a global free market. And our prices are determined every day at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. They're continually changing, and there's not any relationship between what those prices are and what we need to have to stay in farming. And that was understood way, way, way back in the 1920s and 1930s. And the first Farm Bill recognized that what was needed was a price floor under farm products that reflected the cost of farming and that those would be then adjusted for inflation. But instead of that, big business didn't want to pay us a fair price. So what they've done over the years is let that floor drop. And finally, in 1996, with the Freedom to Farm Bill, they converted the whole thing over to a situation where farmers are completely dependent on government payments from taxpayers. And that lets the farm prices of commodities go drastically low so that the big corporations can buy our commodities to feed their livestock or to send over to other countries. And the only thing that keeps the farm economy from collapsing is government payments. Now, that's not the way to run an agricultural economy, because farmers are motivated by two two motivations in that situation. They're either afraid they're going to go broke, so they try to produce more to sell at a lower price, or they're motivated by greed because now we hear that the prices are going to be great and they're always going to be great, and farmers need to make up for those years where they haven't made any money, so they go out and try to produce more that way too. And at the same time, are damaging their land and polluting the water. So that's not the way to do it. The free market, as much as you would hear from right-wing business economists or the Environmental Working Group, the free market is not the answer.
It is not the answer, and it's certainly not a free market now because there are subsidies to American farmers. There are tariffs. There are tariffs that raise the price for any imported farms products. Well, it's not to say the United States is the only person doing this. Certainly a lot of European countries do it as well.
Exactly, yes. It's a very hypocritical stance that we take in the WTO and by passing the North American Free Trade Agreement. We're telling all of the other farmers around the world they should like the free market, and the end result's going to be just glorious. But when, in fact, we could not run our farm economy without some sort of a safety net, because when a farmer goes into the bank in the spring or in the winter to borrow money for the next crop, and the price is already below the cost of production, and the banker doesn't know that the price wouldn't even go lower in the next year, well, banker wouldn't loan you any money. So there wouldn't be any farming done in this country if it was just up to the free market. So rather than say that the big corporations ought to pay us a fair price in the first place, they've opted for the taxpayer to keep the farm economy operating, and that's just totally crazy. There's a very good analogy between what a farm program ought to do and what the minimum wage does, which is says to somebody, if you're going to hire somebody, you have to pay a minimum wage or you don't get the labor. That's what a farm program should do. If Cargill and Tyson Foods doesn't want to pay a fair price to the farmer for their product, then they shouldn't get the product.
But the government should set that fair market price as they do with the minimum wage?
Yes, absolutely. Just like the minimum wage, there should be a minimum price. And that was the law of the land from 1933 up until 1996, especially for corn. We came out of the Depression with that kind of a system. We fought World War II and the Korean War and the Vietnam War under those conditions. And when people think back about what a family farm is, they're going to think back to those times when farmers were secure on the land and when livestock were being raised on the land and when farmers had a good crop rotation that included hay and pasture and small grains. And livestock was not in these big, huge factory farms, these big feedlots, by the thousands or millions, and land and water being polluted.
George Naylor, thanks very much for your time today, and good luck to you.
Yeah, you're welcome. George, I would love to say a lot more if I could.
Well, we're going to have to. We have some other guests, and they'd like to say some too. George Naylor I'm sorry. Go ahead, George.
Well, I'd just like to say that what the current situation with the Farm Bill in the Senate and the House, that the Senate and the House are passing, has absolutely no relationship to what I have told you in terms of what a good Farm Bill should be. Instead, there's a party line that is reinforced by editorials from the New York Times and the Washington Post and all of the big agribusiness papers that subsidies are the only way to go, and that we're somehow going to cut subsidies when, in fact, the cost of farming is so sky high that if they're going to prevent a collapse of the farm economy, if prices go back down, that it would require many more billions of dollars. And just like in 1998 when the Freedom to Farm Act failed, they came in with emergency payments to keep the farm economy operating. If they pass a farm bill like they're talking about now, it'll be totally inadequate if prices drop, and they will have to come back in and spend billions of dollars. And it will not be the family farmer that benefits. It will be the big corporations that get to continue to buy our commodities very cheaply and send them all around the world to destroy other farmers in other countries.
George Naylor, again, thanks very much for your time.
You're welcome.
George Naylor is president of the National Family Farm Coalition. He joins us today from WOI in Ames, Iowa. And joining us now is Robert Reich, who served in three administrations, most recently as Secretary of Labor under President Clinton. He's now professor of public policy at the University of California at Berkeley and has a new book out called Super Capitalism, The Transformation of Business, Democracy, and Everyday Life. He's with us today from studios at UC Berkeley in California. And Robert Reich, nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Hi, Neil. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. You oppose the idea of farm subsidies. Why?
Well, the farm subsidies were designed during the Depression mainly to help small farmers. And the small farm in America has a very important and very romantic place in our hearts. But in fact, fewer than 2% of Americans now work on a farm. Most farm subsidies these days, as George Naylor pointed out, and he is right on this score, go to a very few number of agribusinesses, very, very large super farms. They don't really go to the small farmers any longer, and they are costing American taxpayers a great deal. If you add in the cost of the tariffs we have on foreign imports, about 18%, much higher than the average tariff on imports of any other goods and service, Americans are paying kind of twice. It's like a double whammy. We are paying as taxpayers for farm supports for agribusiness primarily, and we're also paying for higher food prices than we'd otherwise pay if we didn't have all these tariffs and subsidies. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, this is a crazy program.
You said also in an article you wrote that, well, George Naylor said it too, American farm subsidies help undercut farmers overseas.
Yes, if we're concerned, and I think we should be concerned, Neil, about poverty around the world, the reality is that about 50% or more of developing nations' people work on farms. And they can't really sell their exports very easily if we are subsidizing our farmers. I'll give you an example. American cotton growers, for example, they export cotton for just over half what it costs them to produce it because of all the subsidies they get. Now, that means that more than 10 million African cotton farmers are stymied. They can't export from Africa. They can't export what they have. That just furthers global poverty. It means that a lot of the world's poor cannot ascend the ladder into becoming richer. It also means that there's pressure on all developed nations because a lot of people from the poor world want to get into developed nations. They can't make a living as it is on their farms, so they have to emigrate.
Robert Reich is with us. We're talking about why we subsidize farming in the United States. What would happen if we didn't? More with him in a moment. And then Senator Chuck Grassley, Republican from Iowa, will also join the conversation. We want your input as well. If you're a farmer or if you just eat, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Why do we subsidize farmers? Stay with us. I'm Neil Cownan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Cownan in Washington. We're talking about the billions of dollars in subsidies given to American farmers in the Farm Bill. Most people don't pay a lot of attention, but the Farm Bill affects everything from what we eat to how we trade with other countries. To find out exactly what's in the bill, including subsidies, go to npr.org/talk. Our guest is Robert Reich, former Secretary of Labor under President Clinton, now Professor of Public Policy at the Goldman School of Public Policy at the University of California at Berkeley. We want to hear from those of you in the audience who farm, of course, but also from those of you who also eat. Why do we subsidize farmers? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Let's see if we get a caller on the line. And this is Becky. Becky with us from Boise, Idaho.
Yes. I think that one of the things we need to look at about our farm policy is how much of this is for security reasons. Do we want to spend the military to go out and defend our right to get food?
So we have to support the production of food here at home. Are you in farming, Becky?
We do farm. My husband farms. I, of course, work outside the home so we can afford to farm, partly. But the reality is that people, this was the first year that we imported food, and I think that the other thing is that there's not a level playing field in the, when we look at food. We have to meet a lot of the industry standards and our standard, and yet we import food from countries that don't meet those standards.
So unfair playing field, but also fundamentally you argue it's a national security issue. Robert Reich, how do you respond to that?
Well, Becky may be right to some extent. Certainly, if we for some reason could no longer trade with the rest of the world, we would have a big problem if we were dependent on the rest of the world for food. But that argument, Neil, could be extended to apply to all raw materials, almost everything we use, energy, everything else. If we diversify our sources of food and energy and every other commodity we need around the world, among the nations of the world, we are fairly protected against the possibility that everybody in the rest of the world will suddenly turn against us and we won't have any imports and we'll be stymied. No, I think the real argument here and the problem. You ask, Neil, you know, why do we subsidize? The real answer is politics. Politics, 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 politics. I mean, if you're a senator from Iowa, you're going to be talking to Chuck Grassley later, Republican from Iowa. But even if you talk to Tom Harkin, a good friend of mine, Democrat from Iowa, they would say the same thing. We have to have farm subsidies, and that's what senators and representatives from farm states have to say if they want to be reelected. We've got in the habit, I think, in this country of kind of thinking of farm subsidies as kind of a payment, a kind of payoff that we have to make to farm states without understanding that it affects all of us in terms of the amount we pay for food, the taxes we pay, the budget deficits that we endure, foreign policy in terms of keeping a lot of people around the world very poor, immigration policy. This is not just farming. This is almost everything that affects domestic and foreign policy. We can't even get through a Doha round. That's the new international trade round that affects developing nations because we subsidize, and Europeans and Japanese also subsidize their farmers so much.
But you also look at why those countries did in Europe. They were starving in World War II. They don't want that to happen again. And you look at Japan, the same thing again. So that's why they subsidize, is to make sure they ensure a good food supply, because they don't want to have to go to war about it.
Becky, I think you are right historically. I think that that's why they started subsidizing them. But with due respect to you and other farmers, and again, I come from upstate New York. There are a lot of farmers in my community. I have a great deal of respect for people who work on farms. But let me just say this. Most of the reason we are actually continuing these farm subsidies is because it has become, there's a kind of a dependence factor. It's like welfare dependency.
Well,
a lot of, and it's not small farmers. Again, let me emphasize that George Naylor, who was on the program originally, and Becky, I don't know how big your farm is, but almost all our farm subsidies are going to very big businesses. They're big agribusinesses. They're not the small family farms.
Becky, thanks very much for the call.
It's about 1,000 acres, and we get some subsidies. We do sign up for some programs, but we don't get very much compared to, like, the Midwest and places like that. And
okay, Becky.
Living in our part of the universe is different.
Becky, thanks very much. Appreciate it. Joining us now, as mentioned, Republican Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa, the member of the Senate Agriculture Committee, ranking member of the Senate Finance Committee, joins us by phone from his office here in Washington, D.C. And Senator Grassley, good to have you back on the program.
Oh, Neil, I'm always glad to be with you.
I understand you yourself are a working family farmer. So why does the government subsidize farmers?
To be transparent, let me tell your listening audience that I farm 50-50 with my son. That might be a term for crop share in other parts of the country. So if we get farm payments, I get 50% of them. So I want your listeners to know that I get some farm payments. Now let's go back to your question, would you please? I'm sorry.
Sure. Why do we subsidize farmers in the first place? Why isn't it a free market?
Well, I would like to suggest to you that a certain supply of food is basic for two reasons. One, national security. You've got you can't keep a submarine down, a nuclear submarine down, only as long as the food lasts, as an example. We've got social cohesion that's very important. The old saying that any society is only 9 meals away from a revolution, meaning that people would revolt if they went 3 days without food. And so, and all you got to do is look at Germany and Japan since World War II, how they have felt it very important to have a secure supply of food.
Well, Senator, to be fair, Japan once felt it very important to have a secure supply of oil. They went to war over it December 7th, 1941. They now import all their oil, and they're pretty secure.
They're secure until there's a blockade. Then they wouldn't be very secure, would they? Okay, the other thing I want to tell you is, as a family farmer, we've come to the conclusion in America, and maybe looking at worldwide agriculture, that if the institution of the family farm is the most efficient producer of food, as opposed to a corporate farm, as opposed to a state farm like they used to have in Russia. And if you want to keep a family farm secure, and remember our farm programs have been targeted towards medium and small-sized farmers, and I agree with your previous interviewer that large farmers are getting in on the game, and there's a lot of people that are getting help out of the farm program that don't need it. But remember that farmers are at the beginning of the food chain. They pay a price for input that whatever the market charges. They take whatever the market pays on the day they sell. They don't have a lot of control, and most importantly, no control over natural disasters or international politics or domestic politics or when Nixon decides to freeze the price of food in the war on inflation or when Ford decides to embargo the exports of soybeans and they go down from $13 a bushel down to $3 a bushel in about a week. Farmers don't have control of a lot of most things in their business. So we have a safety net for farmers. A safety net is not meant to guarantee a profit. It's to help medium and small-sized farmers over a hump, things beyond their control, unlike great big farmers that have more staying power. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things we're trying to do in this farm bill in a bipartisan way, Dorgan and Grassley, is to put a hard cap so that we don't have a situation like we do today where 10% of the biggest farmers are getting 72% of the benefits out of the farm program.
And you, I know you want to cap it at about $250,000, no more than that to any one farmer. But let's see if we can get another caller in on this argument. Frank is with us. Frank calling from San Francisco.
Yeah, thank you. Say, I have an interest in a business in South Africa. My wife is an African South African, and I happen to know that Nelson Mandela has been campaigning in various ways to end the subsidy of American farmers in order to allow outsourcing of food from Africa. And when you look at it from my point of view, I don't know the details of the different conditions here in this country, but I know that these rich agriculture areas would produce a lot of food, but they don't because of the farm subsidy. They can't compete. And then the U.S. government turns around and supplies the starving people with commodities, which is surplus due to the farm subsidies that have been in place. They create surpluses, which we give to these African countries. They should be producing their own food.
Let Senator Grassley respond to that.
Well, he is right, and Mandela is right. The forum for taking care of that is negotiations, either bilaterally or through the World Trade Organization, to reduce the subsidies that we have in America. Now, it's not a case of reducing subsidies. It's a case of doing away with what Mandela is finding fault with, and that's trade distorting subsidies. In other words, subsidies for Iowa farmers, American farmers, that encourage overproduction. I happen to agree that we ought to negotiate those away. In the meantime, though, I'm not going to unilaterally disarm American farmers until we get the trade negotiations over, so that then you have every farmer being treated by their respective governments in the same way. And right now, Europe subsidizes more than America subsidizes, as an example. So we want Europe to reduce. We will reduce. And if we get such an agreement that Mandela wants and an environment he wants, we will change our subsidies from trade-distorting subsidies, which are the loan deficiency payment, the counter-cyclical payment, and the direct payment, and we will put more of our support for the family farmer into conservation and things that are not trade-distorting.
Robert Reich, I wanted to get your input on that. If U.S. Reduces subsidies, shouldn't the Europeans and the Japanese too?
Well, absolutely. And with due respect to Senator Grassley, I mean, all subsidies are trade distorting in the sense that they encourage American farmers or anybody who's being subsidized in Europe or Japan to do more and plant more and essentially sell more at a lower price than otherwise. The Doha round, that is the multilateral trade round that is stuck because there are so many subsidies going to American farmers, European and Japanese farmers, needs some leadership. I mean, America ideally is the place where that leadership comes from. If we reduced our subsidies substantially and said to Europe and Japan, you must reduce yours as well if we're ever going to help third world countries, well, that would have a big impact. I don't think we can wait for Europe and Japan to do that. There's something called leadership, and America ought to lead the way because Nelson Mandela has a very important point here. If we want to do one thing, the most important thing we can do to reduce world poverty would be to end our agricultural subsidies and also encourage the Europeans and the Japanese to do the same.
Dr. Reich is right, except on one thing. Not all subsidies are trade distorting or encourage overproduction. For instance, we have 36 million acres in America in the Conservation Reserve Program. It's soil conservation, it's wildlife conservation, it's a lot of advantages. Money that the taxpayers pay to the family farmer for the Conservation Reserve Program does not lead to overproduction because we don't produce and sell anything from that land. And I agree with him that the United States ought to show leadership, and I think we have shown leadership in the negotiations. If he's talking about leadership by our changing our farm program before other nations change their farm program, I think that takes away leverage we have. I have told every trade minister and every parliamentarian from other countries who have come to my office and said exactly what Dr. Reich says. I said, negotiate, we will change our farm program, and I gave them four or five instances just since I've been chairman of the Finance Committee where we have changed our law when we've lost cases before the World Trade Organization. We believe in the rule of law and international trade. We will change our farm program when we've got some certainty that we have a level playing field with the rest of the country.
Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa, also with us, former Labor Secretary Robert Reich. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Reagan. Reagan with us from Arkansas.
Hi.
Go ahead, please.
I'm a small farmer here in Arkansas. I do some farming as well as some non-farming work. And I have never taken a farm subsidy payment. The types of crops that I raise mostly livestock and some vegetables.
So you're not eligible?
I'm not eligible, right. But I chose to raise these particular products because they stood to give me the best return with the lowest amount of input as far as money and time and also equipment cost. And what farm subsidies do from my perspective, they encourage types of farming that have very poor returns. I mean, the commodity crops, which require a large acreage to even break even. They also encourage the purchase of very fossil fuel intensive equipment, very expensive, heavy machinery like combines. And if we did away with the current farm subsidy program, we'd see a greater diversity of crops, a better local nutrition system with vegetables. Many of the commodity crop fields would convert to growing more vegetables rather than corn for corn syrup. And
I don't mean to cut you off, Reagan, but we just got a couple of minutes left. Briefly, Senator Grassley, there's a lot of people who grow an awful lot of crops without subsidies, as Reagan does, with vegetables, fruits, nuts, that sort of thing. They're scarcely subsidized at all.
Well, he's right until the last farm bill a little bit, and this new bill we're working on now a little bit more, maybe not directly so much per acre as grain farmers are, but the specialty crops people are coming in and getting help indirectly through more money to be spent for those products on the hot lunch program for our schools and other commodity programs for low-income people, and they're also getting help in additional help in research and development and in marketing.
Okay, Robert Reich will give you the last 30 seconds.
Well, the farmers who benefit the most from taxpayer-funded subsidies, Neil, are those who grow just five crops. That's soybeans, wheat, rice, cotton, and corn. Everybody else doesn't get a penny. But look, the big picture here, American agriculture is a huge success. The beginning of the last century, 60% of Americans were on a farm, now fewer than 2%. Why? Because there have been gigantic leaps of productivity. We ought to be celebrating our success, but instead we are clinging to the Depression. We still are in this romantic notion that we need to support family farms. When we're not doing it, we don't need to do it, we shouldn't be doing it, and it hurts the rest of the world.
Robert Reich's new book is Super Capitalism, The Transformation of Business, Democracy, and Everyday Life. Thanks very much for your time today.
Thanks, Neil.
And Senator Grassley, good luck. We hope you can get a consensus on the bill by the end of the week.
I'm planning on doing that.
Senator Charles Grassley, Republican from Iowa. When we come back, the New York Philharmonic accepts an invitation to perform in North Korea. The executive director of the orchestra joins us. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.